He's a millennial? He's older?
Yeah, okay. Mid-30s, yeah.
Oh, that's our age.
Yeah, cute. Your age.
You're mid-30s?
I'm early 30s. Until 35, I'm early 30s.
Yeah, I'm 30s, 40s. It's no big deal.
30s, 40s. I'm in that age bracket.
Yeah, it's somewhere in that range, yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm going the opposite direction now. I'm telling people I'm 57.
So they can be like, whoa, you age
you look great.
Yeah, you look great. So good yeah. for 57.
I am
yeah.
82.
That's like, a great right. strategy.
I do look good, yes. Yep. Thank you. Hey, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith in Beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Oh, the AC kicked off. So that's good.
Yeah.
It might come back on. So if you hear a rumble underneath our audio, there's really...
If you hear that, yes. Yeah.
There's not much we can do about it.
No, there's not.
There's a guy coming to fix something and he needs it on.
Right. We'll just rebrand this as a white noise ASMR podcast.
Yes, there you go.
You're welcome.
Put this on whenever you want to go to sleep.
Listen, suddenly skyrocket.
Right. Yeah. Yes. This is how we get sponsorship That's and right. ads.
It is chilly in here today, though.
It well, is. It's because the AC was just on.
Well, just because the AC is on doesn't mean the room is chilly. It's supposed to be comfortable.
Mm.
I think in this room, you cool it to frigid, and then it just gradually warms up over time. I think that's the strategy in this particular room.
Yeah.
Because this room doesn't have any exterior walls, so it cools more effectively than other spaces.
Oh, okay. People want to hear about this.
Hey, Patrick asked the question.
They're so into it.
Elise and I are wearing our cold weather gear
we stash. I have a blanket and Patrick has a where did you get this cardigan?
It's very much a Mr. Rogers cardigan feel.
It's from a Halloween costume.
Were you Mr. Rogers?
I was not.
Were you the guy from Up?
I was not. Do you want to keep guessing?
No.
Who
were you?
I was, well, I had a bathrobe on top of it and I was Fat Thor from Avengers.
Oh, funny. Yes.
Why did you have the sweater underneath the bathrobe?
That's what he wears. He wears like a sweater and like a stained shirt and bathrobe on top.
I kind of forgot the sweater and bathrobe combo.
So he's got
he is like up in, I don't know, Scandinavia somewhere where it's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also like this room.
Yes.
Sure.
So yeah, I was in the youth room closet and I dug it out for cold weather podcast days.
Yes. So. When it's 100 degrees outside.
But it's cold in here.
I understand. I understood. Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our news.
All right.
Kangaroo escapes from prison in Czech Republic.
Why is a kangaroo in prison?
Oh, I was incarcerated.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? What did the kangaroo do time for?
Got in a fist fight?
Could be. Yeah. Fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have, I don't know. I got nothing.
I know. I should have thought of a fun little kangaroo pun.
I know.
For this.
Not too late. All right. So kangaroo
had something, smuggling in its
Sure.
pouch.
Yeah, it was smuggling. Yeah. Yes. So kangaroo in prison in the Czech Republic, you said?
In the Czech Republic.
That's a long way from home for that kangaroo.
That is. Maybe that's why it was in prison. Maybe it was for its own protection.
Yeah. Right. Immigrant.
Illegal immigration.
He's just taking all the Czech Republic jobs.
That's right.
Taking their animals' jobs at the zoo.
Yeah.
Authorities says two kangaroos escaped Saturday from the jail southeast of the capital, but one of the marsupials later returned on its own.
Came back.
I don't know if that's it's institutionalized. Like it's
like a jail zoo.
I don't know how to live on the outside, man.
You gotta come back. All I know is that at least they give me 3 squares a day.
Right. Yeah, 3 hots and a cot. Am I right, everybody? Right.
You got cable in there.
Yeah.
That's what the kangaroo is concerned about.
Three hots and a cot.
It's part of a program.
Interesting.
Rehabilitating the kangaroos?
Rehabilitating prisoners.
Okay.
To learn at schools, including farming and animal husbandry as a form of their therapy.
So they're breeding the kangaroos.
So kangaroos, rabbits, llamas, roosters, all these animals live in this.
As you do.
I don't know. I mean, what is it like? Okay, you get out of prison in the Czech Republic and you're going to places like, I learned some great skills about kangaroos. And they're like, great, that means nothing.
I don't know. People pay a lot of money for animal husbandry things. Right. I don't know. There's a
kangaroo's actually delicious too. I'm gonna throw that out there.
Wow.
Okay. I've never had I've never eaten a kangaroo.
Nor have I.
Several times. It's very good.
I did not even know that was like an option.
I don't think you can get it at Wendy's.
Well, I mean, like, I guess technically you can eat just about anything.
Did you say eatable?
Yeah, I did.
But like. I would not think if I went to, Nairobi, they'd be like, we've got elephant on the menu. It's just like, that's just not really an option for food. I just do not imagine that in anywhere kangaroos like on the menu.
Elephants are way more like endangered than kangaroos.
Kangaroos are kind of like nuisance animals in Australia, I think, but
everything's a nuisance animal in
right,
Australia.
They also are farmed. Like there are like kangaroo ranches and stuff, and
yeah,
they're delicious.
What does it taste like?
Chicken. It's like a sweet steak.
Mm.
Yeah,
I don't
very
really
good.
Know that I want my steak to be sweet.
Do you serve it with like a roux sauce?
Very good.
He's stretching for it.
Thank you.
Very good. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
That was pretty good.
You can do better.
Pretty good is what I'm saying. Yes.
I believe in you. You've got more in you.
Maybe, you know.
Hide in your pouch.
Yeah.
This pairs well with a hoppy beer.
A hoppy beer.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't drink.
I thought you said a hobby beer.
Right.
I was like, okay. He is in prison making that prison wine in the toilet.
Yeah.
a good double IPA goes well with
that.
Right. One kangaroo is still at large, I guess. You know, so keep your eyes open if you're a listener in the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
See a kangaroo.
Yeah, any of our
Czech Republic bots that are listening to the pod.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just driving to work one day and you're like, was that a kangaroo? Truly not.
It's in its orange jumpsuit. Right.
It's got like a chain attached to its angle. Yeah.
It's like you got to pass the sign like, you know, prison nearby. Don't pick up hitchhikers.
Right.
Like,
don't pick up kangaroos.
Don't pick up kangaroos. You see life on the inside, right?
That's
you
know, right. Like it changes a kangaroo once you
it does.
Once you serve time.
Yeah, it does. It
you're never the same.
Yeah. All right, are we ready to move on?
I think, we
want to talk more about kangaroos in jail.
I mean, sure, but yeah, we're ready to move on.
What animal would you send to jail? You know, if you saw it on the street, you're like, that's
because
an animal.
Because I
needs to go to jail?
Or because I think it would be fun to have in jail?
Good question.
If I'm in jail, what animal do I want? Or that animal needs to go to prison?
Right, yeah. Those are two different questions.
Yeah.
Let's assume you're not in jail, you know?
I'm not in jail.
You're sending an animal to jail.
Sending an animal to jail because I don't like it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Cockroaches.
They're going to get out.
they've escaped already. You know, like, they go to jail. They open the box. Like, there's none in here.
Yeah.
I don't even know what happened.
They've already escaped from hell.
Fair, but like in my
perfect world.
In my fantasies, I'm sending cockroaches to jail.
Yeah. I'd send those mean ducks over the pond. Those guys are the worst.
What did the ducks next door do to
you? Dude, the ducks next door are vicious. They like will come after you. They will attack you. Like these are not just like, oh, that's a duck that like, no, these are notoriously mean ducks. And it's like this breed of, I don't know what kind of breed it is, but it like even has like a head that has like stuff all over that makes it look mean.
Oh, I've seen these ducks.
Yeah
they've
mean
got like warts.
It's not like
head.
A mallard. Mallards are fine. I have no problem with Canadian geese. Canada geese. I'm fine with them too. Yeah. But these ducks, man.
Not into it.
They're just rude.
Yeah.
Isn't that where we have like our meditation labyrinth thing?
No, the ducks are on the other side of the pond.
Okay.
Yeah, we use it as kind of like a ward, you know, to keep the ducks at bay.
We go out to pray.
Somebody has to go out there and pray every day.
You have to do your duck shift.
Right. It keeps our protective barrier around the property.
It's not working with the vultures, though.
Right now.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I will not be surprised when there are vultures inside the sanctuary one day.
Or prison, for that matter.
Or prison.
Yeah.
Vultures to prison.
Send them all to prison. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had wings and stuff, right? They just fly right out.
Clip the wing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
That seems cruel and unusual.
Nah, just cruel. It's not unusual. They do it all the time.
You're not wrong.
All right. There you go. Kangaroos in prison.
All right.
All right. What does the Bible say about blank? We're back asking these questions.
The beginning of the month.
It is
Happy Labor Day, everyone.
It is Happy Labor Day.
Enjoy your day free from your labors.
Yeah.
Or not.
Children.
Yeah.
No, there's no such thing.
Once you have kids, you're like, you know, kind of rather just go to work.
Right. Is daycare still open? Yeah.
What are you supposed to do with these kids?
Yeah, right. Do all those other people still have to work on this day? That's right. The key.
Yeah. Like, they got to come into my house where I live?
Yeah. That's it.
And well, yeah, everything is closed. So what are you supposed to do with them? You know?
The last day of summer. Just you got to grill up some hamburgers and hot dogs and throw a party.
Yeah. Grill up a kangaroo?
Grill up a kangaroo steak.
Delicious.
You think we can get kangaroo steak at H-E-B?
No.
You might need to go to World Market.
Mm, yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah.
Or the Czech Republic.
Mm. Well, they got two and one escaped. So they've got one.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
There you go, Do you think you could defend yourself against a kangaroo?
How big? Like a full-size male?
Yeah, like adult kangaroo.
No.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. I could land a plane, but I couldn't beat up a kangaroo.
Oh, my gosh.
I could land a plane if somebody's talking me through it. Not just on my own.
Yeah.
If somebody's telling me what to do, I could do it. Yeah.
But somebody telling me how to fight a kangaroo is not going to get me anywhere.
Yeah. Give me earbud in.
Right.
Uppercut. Uppercut.
I'm going to be getting kicked in the face while listening to this. That's not going to help me. Yeah.
What does the Bible say about poverty?
Ooh, okay. That was a drastic change.
Yeah, well, I'm moving it back. Yes, what does the Bible say about poverty? And you know, in relation to how should Christians view poverty? How should we view the poor? What are the things like that?
Yeah,
I think we're going to spoil this right now.
Yes,
the Bible's in favor of helping the poor.
Yeah, not in favor of poverty. Just to be in favor of helping people who are poor. Yeah, I think that like for the first time in our "What Does the Bible Say About Blank" series, we're going to be pretty firmly in the It has a lot to say about this column.
It has a tremendous amount to say.
Yeah, more than like any other topic, Jesus talks about money and how we should deal with it.
And two, the Bible is in favor of assistance to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're gonna get through some things, and we'll kind of get to the more complicated stuff at the end.
Okay.
All right. So I pulled a few verses, you know, from New Testament, Old Testament. Wanted to get us a good range here.
I like it.
All right. So. First, from the Old Testament, from Proverbs 19.
Ooh.
19:17. Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward them for what they have done.
Aw.
Yeah, and also Proverbs 22. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. So.
Okay. That's making an awful lot of assumptions. Oh, the generous, not the wealthy. Sorry, I misheard the beginning. The generous will be blessed because they... Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so being generous is good.
Being generous is good.
And when you're generous, you're actually sharing with God.
You know, this does bring up a question.
Okay. All right.
He will reward them for what they have done. They will be blessed.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Mm. It probably doesn't mean that you're going to get a new sports car.
What's the point?
Just to be.
But can you prove that it doesn't?
I can't prove that it does not mean that.
Maybe if you're a little more generous,
right?
Then you'll get a new sports car. Right.
Just keep trying. Yeah. We haven't hit that threshold yet. No, I mean, so blessing, you know, this kind of can go back to Jesus's use of the term blessed in the Beatitudes, right? Where blessed are these people and these people. And one of the ways that we can think about that blessed is like you're experiencing the life that God wants you to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you are giving generously to things, according to this proverb, you're blessed by experiencing the life that God intends for you. That's the blessing, is that you have the life God desires for you.
I mean, I'm...
Which does not necessarily include a sports car.
I'm in full agreement, but
thanks.
You know, like prosperity gospel preachers and believers out there will point to things like this as evidence that, you know, if you do these things, you will be blessed or you will be rewarded.
Yes.
And, you know, they're going to land on with monetary value or possession or prestige or whatever. You know, this is what they're going to be pointing to.
Yeah. So. There are points in scripture where God blesses people with wealth or prosperity, right? Like Abraham, God rewards Abraham at one point, and you know, all these people bring Abraham all sorts of tributes because Abraham did this thing that was like righteous. And Solomon, you know, asks for wisdom, and so God says, "Oh, that's such a good answer. I'm going to give you all this other stuff, including wealth too," right? And so, like, there are points where God does reward with wealth. That's not what blessed on its own means, right? On its own, it's an experience of the life that God desires for you. And I would say that in my experience, prosperity gospel preachers who are saying like, oh, when you're generous here, God's going to give you more and more and more and the sports car and whatever. And so I, as preacher, need to have the $1 million house and the jet and whatever to show how generous God is to me, right? When that's our framework, I think we are forgetting the gospel of Jesus, which would stand in opposition to that.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. All right. Let's move on.
It's a good question, though.
Yeah. All right. New Testament. Here's Jesus in Matthew.
We're done with the Old Testament already.
Right. Yeah, you know, like, I can't. I feel like we're going to have some other verses here.
Oh, okay.
Like,
all right.
I could have read 50 verses
on
this. And, like,
and
you
scratch
know,
the surface, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think we're just like, yeah, here's what the Bible says about giving to the poor in the Old Testament. Here's what it says about giving to the poor in the New Testament. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? And
with a kangaroo.
I replied, truly, I tell you, whatever you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. So it's whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. Whatever you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. So Jesus is, one, identifying himself with the least of these, and two, saying, like, when you give to them, you know, you're giving straight up to Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is part of the infamous sheep and goats.
Yes. Oh, the infamous sheep and goats.
You know, the sheep and goats. This is where you're divided from the sheep and the goat, and one on my left and one on my right. People know this story. It's infamous.
It's infamous.
I mean, I think it's fairly famous. Yeah. But within, you know, if you're a Bible guy.
That's a funny way to put it. Yeah.
Well, I think it's infamous because people hear this, and often people take this as a very accusatory, literal or accusatory piece of like, I'm not doing this. Does that mean I'm going to hell, right? Because that's kind of how it's pictured in the parable. So that's the infamy comes from this kind of notion of like, is Jesus condemning people who don't do this? And I think it's more complicated than that. But I think Jesus is very clearly saying like, hey, when you do these things, you're doing it to me, right? Like that I am the people who are amongst what you consider the least in your culture.
Yeah. Great. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Australian Jesus, the kangaroos and the dingoes.
Yeah. Wow.
We talked about kangaroos.
The wombats.
Yeah. I say to the wombats on my left. Can't get it.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to get my Australian accent going, but it didn't work out. You know,
very funny.
Okay. I'm willing to risk, you know.
So. Yeah, well, that was a risk. There you
Crikey.
Go. There it is.
Look at this beauty.
Yeah. That's not a knife. Any other Australian stereotypes you want to throw out? Falstaff. Do you guys remember those commercials?
Yeah. Throw another shrimp on the barbie.
There it is. Yeah.
I come from a land down under.
There it is.
All right. So next question.
Okay.
Who are the poor?
Oh. Who are they?
Yeah. I mean, the Bible doesn't necessarily say like.
Are we like supposed to point fingers?
Right.
Yeah.
Do we raise our hands? This is awkward.
I mean, the Bible doesn't say like.
Here's the threshold.
If you make X amount of money per year for your family, you are good.
Right.
Yeah, they don't set the line like the U.S. government does that say, like, below this equals poverty.
Show me your W-2 is not a question the Bible has. Right. So who's the poor according to the Bible? What do we think here?
What do you think, Elise?
Oh, boy. What do I think is the poor according to the Bible? I mean, I think you can be circumstantially poor. Like, I don't know that it's purely, like, a financial line, right? Mm-hmm. Like, He talks a lot about like widows and people who have sort of been like left on the fringes of society in other places. And I've always thought that that's maybe more significant than like a dollar amount that you are or are not making.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think for me, right, if I'm reading through scripture and kind of trying to extrapolate that to modern context and how we understand the poor today, I would say scripture's intent and desire is that all people have the ability to feed and clothe and care for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so if you're unable to do that, then I would say that you fall into the category of the poor according to, right, for whatever reason that might be, right? Whether you're underemployed, unemployed, injured, widow, orphan, right, whatever this might be, if you're unable to attain a basic level of I can feed my family, then I would classify you in the category of poor. And that means that those of us who can feed our family should be thinking about how we can support you and care for you in that context, right? It doesn't mean like, oh, well, you're now over there. You're the poor. But it means that the community should be working to support you and working to care for you so that everybody has that base level. And this is where a lot of points Jesus will sound socialist in his thinking, right? Because there's a lot of ways in which the early church said, hey, we have to make sure we're caring for everybody in this. And so they, you know, the early church in Acts will hold everything in common to make sure that everybody has what they need rather than having a few people with a lot and other people with nothing. Yeah. And I don't know that that's the right avenue in our modern context, but I do think that it means those of us who have a responsibility to allow ourselves to have less so that others can also have, right? I think that is something that Jesus calls us towards.
I think there's some space for it to be about more than just money and whether or not you're able to like feed and clothe your family as well. Like if you think about, if you're familiar at all with like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right, where there's different, like the basic need is that you need access to food and you know, you move on up and then there's self-actualization, I think, is the one at the top. You know, if God's desire for us is to be able to live a fulfilling life in, you know, his presence, then the goal is for all people to be able to move up to self-actualization, right? And so it's about more, I think, than just meeting that very basic bottom of the pyramid. It can be about having opportunities to reach that self-actualization, which is not purely a financial thing, right?
Yeah, sure.
Like if you think about who is the least of these in society? Well, who are people who've been sort of systematically kept down financially or otherwise, kept out of opportunities, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'll just clarify. I don't think that we should just need to like throw money at someone until they have enough to feed their family. Like that's not
say,
the intention.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, your
yeah, now I'm done. Right.
Done.
No, I think all of those things go along with it. Right. Supporting this individual, this family, right, involves all of those aspects. And how are we giving you this opportunity to experience the blessing that God has for you, where mm-hmm. God desires you to have a certain way of being able to exist and survive in the world. Right. And poverty will look different here in the United States than poverty will in other places.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Right? And we have got to be aware of those contexts as well.
Yeah. And, you know, the reality is like kings of the past might look at a middle-class family today and be marveled by what they have at their fingertips. Right.
Sure.
You know, like, oh, ice on demand.
Yes.
You know, like that alone is like a marvel.
What is this black magic?
Yeah. Yeah. That like you have that whenever you want. And so, you know, it is.
You have kangaroos in your prisons.
It's a long story.
It's definitely subjective, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're both hitting some interesting points, you know, that we can point to the Bible. The Bible is very concerned about people on the fringes that are poor.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, we use kind of, it uses a phrase often, and that is orphans and widows.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is kind of the stand-in of like, got to take care of the orphans and the widows.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean just those two check boxes,
right,
and then like you're done. I think they're just, those are just like phrases or people that are kind of put straight in front of them. Like if you're not doing this, you're failing, right?
Yeah.
Like this is
baseline.
This is what you need to be concerned about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in a patriarchal society, orphans and widows have very little in terms of possession, and also very little in terms of future.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like, oh, well, we're going to get into how did Israel respond to like the poor. You know, orphans and widows don't have property, they mm-hmm. don't have land, and they have no possibility of getting property or mm-hmm. land. Like, that's not going to happen. And so it's, you know, making sure that they're cared for within society matters to the ancient Israelites. So mm-hmm. in Isaiah 1,
it's supposed to.
Yeah. Learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. Like we're concerned about orphans and widows.
Yep.
James has kind of the same thing. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction.
Okay.
You know, so like, yeah. So, and again, that is more of a stand-in, not just necessarily like orphans and widows. That's
when was the last time you guys visited an orphan?
That's a great question. Probably.
Do I know an orphan?
Yeah, I don't know that. I was thinking about that myself. I don't know that I would know. I know anyone who classifies themselves as an orphan.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. My grandfather was an orphan.
Oh.
Yeah. So I knew him.
There you go. There's one.
Very well for a long time.
I think at some point, you know, like you may not have parents, but are you still, you're no longer really an orphan.
Because you're not like a young child.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like everybody's parents will one day pass.
Yeah.
Like,
and some people refer to themselves as orphans after both their parents die.
I was orphaned at the age of 47.
Sometimes people use that language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I probably shouldn't make fun of that.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Take that. Rewind it back.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we go. That's who God is concerned about. People on the fringes.
Yep.
People who have not only no possessions, but no possibilities
in
front of them.
Yep.
So for every culture and context, you know, we have to think through who are those people and what can we do?
And these are people who, for ancient Israel, it would have been unique for them to care about.
Correct.
Because in other contemporary cultures, they were just forgotten, right?
Right.
They were the beggars on the corner and maybe you threw a thing to them or whatever, right? But they are not the ones who are advancing your society, so mm-hmm. why would I invest my time and energy in them? And Israel is instructed by God to care explicitly for them. So these are the people that we care about.
This is, we get into some kind of strange like laws here, right? About like if your brother dies and leaves behind a wife, then it's kind of like your duty to like marry.
There is some of that.
Yeah, your sister-in-law.
it gets complicated. Yeah,
those are not in my notes, but yes, that is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, that's weird, but it is in their culture designed to like how to care for them, because a widow, a childless widow, mm-hmm. is the worst widow of all, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like
what does she have? Yeah.
Because what do you have at all? You know, like.
Well, and you know, in the context of that culture, right? When you're married off, you leave your birth family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you join this new family. And so if there's no one in this new family who will care for you if that son husband dies, then you have to rely on your family to take you back. And they might not,
right?
For any number of reasons, right?
Sure.
And that's, Yeah, so then you're just in this in-between space, which is why laws like that were set up. So, like, okay, it's your responsibility to care for this person. Yeah, it feels weird to be like, okay, and I have to marry my sister-in-law. But it is more about I'm here to provide for and care for this person that my family agreed is now a part of our family.
Yeah.
All right.
Fortunately, those laws don't still exist today. We can care for one another in other ways.
Right. Okay.
So I think we're all, you know, hard to walk away from the Bible is saying the Bible's concerned about poor, especially those on the fringes.
Yes.
You know, for them, orphans and widows, for us, could be anything.
If you walk away from the Bible and say the Bible doesn't care about that, you have not actually read the Bible.
Oh, sure.
I don't know what you read. Maybe the Libby, I don't know what's Bible misspelled. The Blibe. Maybe you read the Blibe.
The Blibe.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, the Holly Blibe. And now
Bible
we're
according to AI.
Yeah.
We're getting this more complicated questions.
Okay.
Will there always be the poor?
Oof. Jesus says yes.
Jesus says yes. Deuteronomy says yes, and Jesus says yes.
Oh, that's two. That's
so, well, if Deuteronomy says it.
Well, I mean, Deuteronomy said it, and then but we got to Jesus, they're still poor, and then Jesus kind of affirms it.
Like, so, yeah. It's going to be a thing. Yeah, I think, listen, until God's return, Jesus' return, and all things are brought into completion, yeah, I don't know that we can ever eliminate poverty or those who live on the fringes. I think that doesn't mean we should stop trying,
right?
I think there's a reason to try to bring people into a place of being able to experience life and fulfillment and things like that, but yeah, they're probably always going to be. And I mean, sometimes we even know this through studies now, like some people choose that, right? Some people, there are people who are homeless by choice. And that's just a reality that's there too.
Yeah, I think less poverty is certainly possible and well within our grasp as a society. We just are not doing it.
Yeah,
now we've got like eight really rich dudes that do not care. But
and none of them are in this room.
And none of them are in this room. So we need to start by getting them in this room.
Maybe behind that curtain. Yeah. You over there, Elon?
Go check it out.
Bill?
Bill Gates does a lot.
He's not the first one that comes to my mind when I think of that. Yeah. But, you know.
He's also not in that top eight anymore. He's, you know.
Yeah.
Probably, you know.
Not that he's in the poorhouse, just to be clear.
Right. Yes. He's fine.
Yeah. You see Bill Gates on the street. Make sure to give him a dollar.
Yeah. Give him a paperclip.
Yeah.
To make up for Clippy.
Trauma.
Like, it seems like you're trying to give to the poor. Right. Would you like help with that?
Yeah. Thanks, Clippy. I would love that.
Pretty Clippy. Yeah. So I have heard from Christians, or at least read from Christians.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Using this, Jesus saying you'll always have the poor.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the get out of
yeah.
the get out of poor free card.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, hey, Jesus says we're always going to have the poor. So like,
yeah, why bother?
Kind of, why bother?
Yeah.
It's not going to solve that problem.
Yeah.
So like, we good. You know, like, it's just going to happen. They're poor. I'm not.
Yep.
That's just the way the dice rolled.
Yeah.
Usually people who say that are not poor. Just so clear.
Right.
You know, life favored them.
Yeah.
Right. They're not
poor. That's
poor
just the way the dice
like,
rolled.
No, don't help me.
That's right.
Well, usually I misspoke. They usually don't say that's the way the dice rolled. They usually I earned it. They didn't.
Oh, yeah. So, like, bootstraps.
Yeah.
Well, and I think sometimes they even do say that's the way the dice rolled because it's just a matter of luck, right? I got where I am. That's just unfortunate that they didn't, right? Sometimes we don't even want to look to how we worked hard. I think other times, yes, we definitely say like, oh, well, I worked hard. If they worked hard, they could have this too.
Sure.
I think we can fall in both sides of that particular bad argument, right? Neither one of them are good.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you make of that? Like this idea of like, well, Jesus says the poor is always going to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that means it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Jesus says that one time.
He does.
He says a lot of other things about caring for the poor a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of other things about how we should be thinking about our money and our wealth and how we use that in society a lot more. So I think that we might be served well by reading that verse within the greater context of Jesus' overarching message, along with the overarching message of Scripture, because this verse is in Deuteronomy once and in the Gospels a couple of, I don't remember how many of the Gospels have this particular verse.
Sure.
But, right, so two to maybe five times versus all the other verses of Scripture that tell us to care for the poor. I think we should be thinking about that. I also think it's okay to have different approaches to how we care for the poor, right?
Sure.
I don't need every person to say, okay, every time I see a person on the street, I'm going to give them $5. Like, that doesn't have to be your path.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also pretty clear that Jesus slash God want us to be doing things for the poor intentionally and not just bypassing them on the street and ignoring them and leaving them for to fend for themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting because I take that verse much more as like, well, your work is never going to be done. Like, you always need to be caring for the poor.
That's because you're a good human being.
Yeah. Wow, thank you. That might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
That's definitely in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, you know, society should always be looking to improve.
Yeah.
And even like, even those of us right now who are like, I think we're, you know, I like what we're doing. I like these things. I like where I'm at. I'm hopeful my great grandkids look back and be like, there are so many ways that y'all failed.
Sure.
And we're continuing to make it better.
Yeah. They're failing in new ways.
Yeah. Sure. And by failing new ways. Or like there's still things that their great-great-grandkids will look back. You know, like I can look 150 years ago and be like, how could society allow slavery in America? And why were we on board with this? And I hope they look back on us like, how could Americans allow slaves in other countries to produce their goods and like just kind of bought it and without much thought behind it?
Sure.
You know, like, and I'm hopeful that we're continually going forward, bending towards justice and towards, this vision of that Jesus is kind of putting out there of like giving generously, but we might not ever make it, before the world is done.
Yep, sure. That's weird.
All right, so let's take a look at a couple of more complex things here.
Okay.
You know, first we got some commands for Israel.
Okay.
And so this might be, a good question here. So we all agree the Bible is telling us to care for the poor. And I think, again, most Christian churches are on board with that.
Yes.
If you're not, that's a very weird place to be.
You're an outlier. Yeah.
You're a huge outlier. Yeah. You're a kangaroo and a Czech person. You know?
You're just like, not supposed to be there.
I don't know how you got here. Nobody really knows. Like,
we're not going to look for you that hard if you run away.
But how is now becoming the question, right?
How do we
what
do
does that mean for churches in America, Christians in America? So Israel's got a couple commands to them as a nation.
Okay.
And I didn't pull all of these, but here's from Deuteronomy 14. At the end of every 3 years, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in the same year and lay it up within your towns. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the sojourner, the fatherless, the widow, who are within your towns, shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you and all the work of your hands that you do. So we got a tithe that's going directly to Levites, which are the priests.
Yeah. Then early priests. Yep.
Early priests. Then sojourners, fatherless, widows.
Mm-hmm.
So aliens, orphans, widows.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
From other countries, not the extraterrestrial type. Just to
maybe. We don't know.
But what about Predator?
Aliens mean, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
A Predator's like a little cute, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Like the hair thing.
Muscular.
Yeah. Right.
It's tall.
I'm saying very capable. Yeah.
Okay. This is getting weird.
Here's another one from Leviticus. Basically, same things. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not strip your vineyards bare or gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God.
Yeah, that's what Ruth does in the story of Ruth.
Yeah,
she comes along and gleans.
In practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, she's a foreigner, she's an alien, and she is doing that.
Yeah, the gleaning one is probably one that Israel did pretty well on a regular basis. Most people were doing that in our best estimation. There are a lot of these laws that Israel, as a nation, was not doing great with.
So there's some other ones. You know, I didn't, pull everything here. You know, basically when they get into the promised land, they divide up all the land by family.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is like, that's your family's land.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be passed on from generation to generation to generation. And even if you have to sell your family's land or you become like, for whatever reason, there are resets periodically where it comes back to you.
Yep.
You know,
it's supposed to be every 50 years.
Because land, is... there's a limited number, and it's the one thing, you're going to need to make it in the ancient world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see that, there are ways that people might lose that foothold, but it's supposed to come back to the family at some point.
Yeah, this was called the Year of Jubilee. It was supposed to be the year after the seventh year, so 50 years,
and
to our knowledge. never happens.
In, yeah, in fairness, we never see this in practice.
Right.
But it's said to the Israelites, this is what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah. One of the things I've heard is that every king that came into practice would restart the count. And
on my 50th year of reign.
Right. That's, yes. Well, I don't know how accurate, but that's one of the things that I've heard when I've done some studying on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems like it would be accurate. Right, yeah. Based on what I know.
Classic kings.
That's,
am I right? Am I right?
That sounds like Solomon. That's such a Solomon move.
Solomon was too busy.
He had a lot going on.
In a lot of ways. He had a lot of things.
He had a lot going on. So we got some rules for Israel on how to care for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with these as an American Christian today?
Yeah, so like, do we need the federal government to be responsible for caring the poor? Is that kind of the question?
Yeah, or like, you know, should we do these things?
Should we have a tithe and put all our food out in the middle of the town and let people just come and eat it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, I think there are probably more practical ways for us to do this.
Right.
Yeah. I think, we got to remember that we do have a personal and corporate responsibility to care for the poor as Christians.
Yes.
We have said on this podcast previously that the United States is not explicitly a Christian nation, right? It is a Christian, or is a nation that has perhaps been founded on principles that oftentimes align with Christianity, but it is not explicitly a Christian nation. So it is not fair for us as Christians to shirk our responsibilities and say, okay, it's all on the federal government. You got to go and figure out how to care for all these people because that's what we pay you to do. I don't think that's a fair Christian response. I also don't think it's a fair Christian response to say, okay, federal government, you go do all of it and I don't have to take care of anything, right? Like there's this place in the middle where, we should, as a society, I think it's good for us to advocate for the care of the poor because I think our society is better off when we do. But I also think that our personal responsibility as people of faith should call us to be actively caring for the poor in a practical way in our own lives. Mm.
Yeah, personally, it annoys me or frustrates me when Christians out there will point to some passages meant for Israel and be like, these apply to America today, but not these. And usually they're like, because I don't like these.
Right.
I personally think it's probably the easiest to say none of them apply to America. Yeah. And we have got, and that's just the way it is, versus picking and choosing things like that. But there are things that can be gleaned from this.
From the edges of the field. From the edges. That they let fall to the ground.
From the edges of the Bible. And that is like, as a nation, God is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the individual responsibility. It's a national responsibility.
Yeah.
And so that means when we see the homeless or the orphan or the widow or the sojourner amongst us, it's not just you in your car at that time, your job to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job as a society to figure that out.
Yeah.
And I think that God is saying that. And so do you have a role to play? Yes. But it's not up to one individual Christian or one handful of individual Christians to be like, we're going to fix homelessness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Society has to get on board with that. And sometimes the easiest way for society to do that is through government.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. Yeah. I think.
And if not government, other organizations, right? Yeah. That are set up for that, man.
Yeah. So I think, is it fair to say it is the church's primary, the church should be more concerned about the poor than the government? I think that is true.
Yes.
But I also want to live in a society where the money that I give to the government goes towards things that benefits its citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And that means funding school lunches and funding, care for these types of people that the Bible outlines as the fringes of society. I'm on board with that. I'm totally fine if that's the way the government is going to use its money. It's certainly worse ways it could use it. Yep. So, and even if you want to say like there's waste attached to that or bureaucracy is going to get in the way, and there probably is true, there are still worse ways for the government to be using its money than serving its people.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I'm on board with it. But I understand, some Christians out there are not.
Yeah, but what we have to get on board with is how then are we going to care for the poor, right? Yeah. If you're not on board with the government doing it, we can have a conversation. That's fine. Yeah. But how are we going to do it? Like, we can't say that we can just kick them off to the side and leave them to whatever.
If you want to say it's not the government's responsibility to provide free meals for our kids who are in need, great.
Yeah.
Churches, step on up.
How are you going to do it? How are we going to make sure
these
kids get
fed? We got to figure that out. How to feed children, it's not the government's responsibility to provide assistance or Medicare for the elderly or those who without. Great. church, step on up. You know, like you got the time, you got the resources. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of churches out there are doing a lot of great things.
There are many things.
But, right. But
a lot of churches are also ignoring this and not doing that. Yeah.
All right, I have two other passages here that are kind of complex, and we can have some debate about as we're kind of wrapping up here.
I like debate.
All right, so the first is about the poor. I got one about the poor and one about the wealthy. Which one is you want to go with first?
Let's hit the poor.
Keep the poor going.
Yep.
Okay.
We're on a roll.
This is from 2 Thessalonians. For even when we were with you, we gave you this command. Anyone unwilling to work should not eat.
Oop.
And I've heard this, before.
Where this is going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we think about this?
One, I think this is a very specific context.
Mm-hmm.
There is value to work.
Yeah.
I don't make no argument with that, right? There is value to work. And I do think there is value to letting people participate in their own act of restoration.
Yeah.
I don't think that that needs to be the first step requirement, right? Like if you're like, hey, you are here and you're hungry because you haven't eaten in several days and you don't have a place to sleep tonight, great. You have to come and work for me for 8 hours and then I will give you a meal. Like that doesn't feel like what Thessalonians was talking about or what the problem in Thessalonica was at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds more like it's about like profiting off of other people's labor and being unwilling to do it yourself. That would be kind of my first blush, like feeling towards it.
Yeah, in some ways, you know, I've heard this against the poor. I've never heard this against like the top of the food chain.
Sure,
lazy rich people
who don't do anything, right. Who are just living off of their investments. But interesting enough, that does usually get applied that direction.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we have done in our youth program is gone downtown in Houston, volunteer at a soup kitchen at a place called The Beacon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked with them and they've talked with our youth about like, hey, tell us about what this looks like. And some of the kids will have questions because some of the people will come through the line with fairly obvious mental health issues.
Sure.
Some will not kind of look at them, but some will be well-dressed and may have an iPhone and are there to get this meal that we're preparing and things like that. And so the kids ask those questions. And so they kind of, you know, mentioned to the kids like usually about, you know, a third of the people that come through have mental health issues or addiction, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they're hard, like they're difficult to deal with. And then about a third are people that have basically resigned themselves to be homeless. Mm-hmm. Like they've just like, this is their life and they're not really trying to change. And about a third are people who are found themselves homeless, but are working to get out of that process.
Right.
And we are there to fill that gap. Like they get a free hot meal. And they might go back to work. They just don't have a home right now, or they, for whatever reason, they're kind of in that place. And so, you know, when you think of like our homeless money towards homelessness, you know, those are three very different problems.
Yeah.
How do you solve them, especially on a dwindling budget, is much difficult. Like, which one do you kind of choose? And the other two groups, you're like, there's just not a lot we can do for you.
Yeah.
And that's hard. Like, and so when I look at this, I'm like, yeah, I agree. Like people need to have some responsibility for their own selves.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of factors that take place.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And again, this one passage from Paul, this one thing does not erase our command, which is to be generous to the poor.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And Jesus never has an asterisk attached to that. You know, like he's like, just be generous to the poor. And, you know, I found like what I do with my money, God and I are concerned about what the poor do with their money. God and them are concerned about.
Yeah.
Yep.
God has never asked me to be concerned about what they do with their money.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, I would have to do some more research into this, but I would guess, you know, Paul is writing to an early church in Thessalonica, right? So this is also probably one of those communities that's at some level holding things in common.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean for the community to make this agreement that we're going to hold these things in common? And then one person would be like, great, now just give me whatever I need and I'm not going to work for it.
Yeah.
Right. That's a very different context than, hey, I'm starving on the street or suffering from mental health challenges or whatever that is and, you know, unable to work because of those things.
Yeah.
That's a very different scenario. And I'm guessing there's some cultural context in the letter to the Thessalonians that we are missing there when we just take that single verse out of it.
I mean, they're living in a world where they imagine Jesus is coming back truly any day.
True.
And so, like, how do you go to work when you're like, Jesus could come back next week?
Yeah.
You know, so I think we're saying, like, some people are just like, eh, Jesus is coming back. Whatever.
I quit my
job because, like, why am I going to go to work when Jesus is going to come back anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I still want to get fed.
Yeah. So, obviously. Because I'm hungry.
Because people be hungry.
Yeah. But I agree. It's, yeah. All right. Then here's from James, chapter 5.
This is the wealthy?
About the wealthy.
Okay.
And it's long.
Here we go.
It's 6 verses long.
Brace myself.
Do we have one that applies to the in-between somewhere? Just, you know.
Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you have failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvester have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourself in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who is not opposing you.
Oof.
Yikes.
James has got a bone to pick.
Yeah, something to say.
Yeah, James has a lot of things to say throughout James. Yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple things here. One, we shouldn't just shirk this off and say, oh, that doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it probably doesn't directly apply to most of us, right?
Yeah.
We're probably not landowners in the same context of landowners in this time, where you have people working for you that you're ripping off or not paying fairly or,
yeah,
you know, like, most of us are probably not in that circumstance. But we probably are participating in various levels of our economy where we choose what we buy or how we spend our money based on its cost to us rather than on its ability to compensate someone else fairly for their work, right? Mm-hmm. I bought things off of Amazon this morning, and what did I do? I looked for the cheapest one, right? Because I needed this thing and I needed it fast, rather than, you know, giving any thought to, well, how is this going to impact the person who made this and their ability to have a living wage? And that's on me, right? And and so how do we put ourselves in the frame of reference that, okay, I'm not maybe paying a laborer in my vineyard, but when I buy this thing and I intentionally buy the cheaper version of this thing that's maybe made in, you know, one of these places like you were describing, Patrick, where it's made by people who are basically in slavery, like, what does that mean for how I'm impacting the world around me?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that when it comes to, like, okay, I get James is anti-rich.
Yeah.
But how rich do you have to be to be rich?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, that's the question. Yeah. Like, am I rich? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But you compare my family's level of, like, you know, savings, ownership, land ownership, things like that, to somebody in the streets of India.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wealthy beyond measure.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like, and so, but compared to my community, I'm not, you know, like, so, or the aspirations of my community. I think most people think, like, well, who are the two rich people that this is talking about? Those are obviously people who make more than me.
Yeah.
So clearly, like, you know, like, anybody above me, this could apply to.
Yeah.
Not me though.
Yeah. But I think all of us can read this about ourselves if we're intentional about it. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think Jesus, like, I don't think Jesus doesn't want you to have a TV. Right.
Yeah.
But maybe when you're buying that TV, you're thinking, okay, more than just, this is the biggest one I can get for the $500 in my pocket, but how can this $500 buy a TV that also benefits other people, right? That also is paying a living wage to their workers, or is, you know, whatever that is done, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, we're not going to be perfect, right? We're going to make mistakes. We can't know everything about every single item we buy ever, but we can be more intentional and more conscious than we often are, including myself in this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's a challenge. It's a hard verse. It's, you know, difficult, mm-hmm. especially in America. I think most of what we do, we think of, like, I've got X problems in my life and all of them would be solved by being rich.
Yep.
You know, like, we think those things.
We've got 99 like, problems and money, you know, is all of it.
Right.
Yeah. Like, every problem I have in my life would just be solved if I was rich. Mm-hmm. Like, we think, like, it's easy to think that way. And in many ways, it might even be true.
Right. You know? To be fair.
Yeah. But I think we're saying, like, being rich does not really solve all these problems.
No.
Like, we're pointing out, like, actually, when you're rich and you're tempted to hoard, to oppress, to keep the bottoms of society down,
mm-hmm.
And to exploit those that work for you because out of desperation or necessity, you know, like, you are going to find yourself, you know, you have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter, according to James. Like,
yeah.
You're
Which, if you're going to get fat, that's the day to do it, I suppose. Yeah.
No, I want to be fat way before.
You slaughter the fat things. You know, the lean things keep on living. The fat gets slaughtered. That's true. So, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
All right. Have we said all there is to say?
No.
Oh.
I mean, like, we said all we're going to say.
Oh, okay. All right.
But
if we wanted to say what the Bible has to say about porn, truly...
We scratched the surface, if that.
Virtually every book of the Bible has something to say about this.
Yes.
Are things that could be gleaned here. And here's an overview, you know.
Yeah.
Bible's concerned about the poor.
Very much so.
And not only just...
Way more than other stuff that we've talked about.
The Bible's concerned about you and how you help the poor.
Yes.
That is, you know, both those things are very, very true.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, if you enjoyed this week's episode and you want to talk to us about where you think the line is for who's wealthy and who's not, we'd love to hear that. You can send that to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And in all seriousness, send us other ideas for what you might like to hear what the Bible says about. Did I say that in a way that was clear? What the Bible says about blank. We need other blanks, and we'd love to have some suggestions from you all. So if there's something you've been wondering, hey, what does the Bible say about this? We would love to hear that. You can send that to us as well. And then, of course, you can find all our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.